Welcome to a podcast of the Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Okay, let's land this thing. Actually, we're trying to get it off the ground, which is a different thing altogether. Welcome. We have quite a jam-packed show today, I'm happy to say, including in the second hour, the very first great herb debate. Compliments of One Seed Chicago and Mr. Brown Thumb and a bunch of people who are going to stand up for their seed and debate on this very radio program. So that ought to be interesting. Somewhere around just after 10 o'clock in the second hour, we will begin the great herb debate. And of course, in the One Seed Chicago contest this year, you know that the three herbs under consideration are basil, chamomile, some people say chamomile, and
cilantro.
Cilantro or coriander. Okay. So there we have the three that will be debated in the second hour. And you're already on team. What team are you on, Heather?
Chamomile.
You're on team chamomile.
Yes.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Chamomile's lovely, and it's brought me great comfort in the years, so I'm rooting for chamomile.
It has, and continues to, right?
Yes. Oh, gosh, yes. I work in radio, and I'm a mother. I thought we covered that last week. Chamomile is good. Nice soothing bath, nice cup of tea, pretty flower, pretty smell. Yay.
Okay.
And apparently, you can make beer out of it, too.
Really? Chamomile beer?
Yeah. Mr. Brown Thumb tweeted that last week, that he has a listener, a follower, that makes beer out of it. So that I'd like to try, chamomile beer.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would be, I would be willing to try that.
I'd love to.
Okay. Well, that happens in the second hour, and we will have team basil, team chamomile, team cilantro represented, as well as a guy named Sal Gilberti, who has written a book called Herb Gardening from the Ground Up. He is one of the great herb growers in the country. I guess he's got the largest business there. That is cool, too. So he's going to kind of serve as a referee, I guess, a contributor. He's the third generation owner and proprietor of Gilberti's Herb Gardens in Westport, Connecticut. It's established in 1922. The largest herb grower and supplier in the United States today. And his book is really cool and gives you, if you want to grow just an herb garden, he maps it out for you. So I don't know if he's got the chamomile beer in here. I'll have to ask him if he knows about that. I imagine he does. Anyway, so we'll get to that later. First hour, however, and Rick DeMaio weather will be at the bottom of the hour, as always. But first hour today, I'm very happy to have Max Muller in the studio from Environment Illinois. Executive director, right?
Program director.
See, now I got to go
Give
back.
Give me a promotion.
Now I got to go. Do you guys have an executive director?
We have, kind of. I kind of do everything.
See? All right. Program director. You know, I did, when I was writing, doing the website last night, I was just doing it off the top of my head. And see, in some groups have executive directors, some have program directors, some have just directors. And you always got to get
know.
It right. You never know
you
which
never
is
know.
Which. And but I'm happy to have you back, regardless of who you are and what you do. No, you do great stuff at Environment Illinois. And as a matter of fact, the reason I brought you, you and I have talked over the past several weeks about environmental stuff going on. On the national stage and on the state level. It's important because it's an election year. And when you get to an election year, the game changes. And you and I were just talking out in the conference room before we came on air about, this is my theory about what happens with environmental matters. And you get to an election year and environment goes down the tube. The environment gets sold out totally. And I told you what where I wanted to start was with, all right, I've got this little quiz on my website. Who said this? Here's the quote. "We have a supply of natural gas that can last America nearly 100 years. Experts believe this will support more than 600,000 jobs by the end of the decade." Now, who said that? A, an oil and gas industry lobbyist, or B, the current president of the United States? And your answer would be, if your answer was B, you are correct.
President of the United States.
The president of the United States, who came out in the State of the Union. And if you watch that, I'm sure a number of environmentalists kind of tilted their heads to the side and went, eh? Because he was talking about opening up 3/4 of the available area for oil and gas on the coast and in the country. And he was talking about right there, that quote, the natural gas, which is basically fracking.
Exactly. Yeah.
Basically fracking. It is fracking.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. It is.
Well, no, because if you say oil and gas, you know, there's still the oil.
Oh, so they'll just drill instead of just drilling and blowing.
Right. Yeah. It's drill, baby, drill, mm-hmm. And it's frack until you can light your water on fire. And that's really interesting because the guy who did the documentary Gasland got arrested at Congress the other day by the Congress for daring to want to record a conference about oil and gas. It was a committee. It was a public hearing. And he was not just turned away with his camera crew. He was arrested and frog marched while the ABC crew and part of the deal was supposed to be, well, he didn't have proper press credentials. Well, the ABC crew was turned away, too. I think they had proper press credentials.
You wanted.
They weren't frog marched the way this guy was. Fox, and I'm forgetting his first name. Who?
I can find out.
And he did the documentary Gasland, which I saw a few weeks ago, and I've been depressed ever since.
That's a very good movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a very good movie. It really highlights the dangers of fracking, which Obama did not talk about in his State of the Union.
Okay, so with that as a setup. And you understand where I'm coming from. Josh Fox. Thank you so much. Josh Fox. With that in mind, people who will defend the environment, why should they not be depressed over what the president had to say?
Well, the president said a number of good things in his State of the Union speech. He committed the country to doubling its fuel efficiency standards, putting Americans to work exploiting clean energy sources. Unfortunately, one of the sources of energy he cited as being clean was fracking for natural gas.
Yeah, that's a problem, yeah, because it's kind of a doublespeak thing now. Everybody says, if you burn gas, it's clean. Yes, it is. The problem is getting it's dirty.
It's, you know, natural gas is a fossil fuel, mm-hmm. and we are not going to be able to solve our most pressing environmental problems in this country until we get off fossil fuels, natural gas included. One of the biggest environmental concerns associated with fracking is the extracting it from the ground, or with natural gas, is the fracking, extracting it from the ground. But let's not forget, it is also a global warming emitting source of energy. When you burn it, it produces carbon dioxide, which contributes to global warming, which is probably our most profound environmental problem. Now, drinking water being endangered by fracking. Anybody who's seen Gasland, there's all sorts of scary stuff in Gasland about fracking's effect on drinking water. We haven't seen the environmental impacts of fracking to a very large extent yet in Illinois, although our state's most iconic state park, Starved Rock State Park, which is probably the single most loved park in the state.
To the tune of more than 2 million visitors each year.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, the fracking debate has come to Illinois in the form of a proposed frack sand mine where they're going to extract the sand that's used in fracking. And for anyone who doesn't know what fracking is, it's a mining process that extracts natural gas from the ground that was previously thought to be unextractable. They use high-pressure water and a mix of chemicals, toxic chemicals, and the companies that do this consider the mix a proprietary secret. They won't tell us what it is.
That's the other thing I like is they go, okay, just, you know, let us know if we can protect ourselves. No, I can't tell you that because it's proprietary. What gives them the right? And I know it gives them the right. Doesn't it go back to 2005 and Dick Cheney's Energy Council?
The companies that frack have long maintained that the chemical mix that they use in their fracking mixtures are a proprietary secret. The problem is they inject it underground into bedrock to break up bedrock and force natural gas out. The problem is it taints the water supply, and having an unknown mix of industrial chemicals in your water supply is not something that we want. And mm-hmm. that's the real acute danger associated with natural gas extraction.
And you've probably seen in the news clips, but if you watch the movie Gasland, the documentary, Josh Fox goes there in his neighborhood. They're about to. Well, they're talking about fracking in his Pennsylvania neighborhood where he lives. And so he goes on a mission around the country to see where else this has been done. And pretty much everywhere he goes and finds that fracking has been performed, the water has gone bad. And there's just story after story after story. And, of course, the most famous part of it is the guy lighting his faucet. He turns on the water in his faucet, puts a lighter next to it, and the thing goes poof. And that's kind of the legacy of fracking, at least. There's that danger. The point is that might not be the case every time fracking is done. Why wouldn't we investigate it to see if it's safer? And I guess it gets back to Obama not talking about the dangers of it. And I'll let you continue, though. I interrupted you.
I think what we're seeing right now in the Obama administration is the president and his people considering every decision he makes and everything he says through the lens of the 2012 election coming up. Everything is at stake. If the president doesn't win his election, we'll have a Republican in the White House. And, you know, back when the field of Republicans was 8 or 9, half of them had proposed abolishing the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency as one of the policies that they would implement if they were the president. The risk to the environment if President Obama loses is very high. Now, the president has actually, in the last 4 years, made a ton of progress on the environment. Let's just go back to the Bush administration. During the Bush administration, the it was a terrible administration for the environment. The Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act in this country are two of our most important environmental laws. They say that you can't pollute. It's illegal to pollute the waterways without a permit. It's illegal to pollute the air without a permit. And under those laws, the EPA has to regulate harmful pollution. If there's a pollutant and new science comes out saying that it's harming human health, the EPA has to make a regulation to require polluters to use the best available technologies to control that pollution under the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. These are great laws. The problem was, under the Bush administration, the science would come out saying that pollution was dangerous. Take ozone pollution, take mercury pollution. And the policy people in the White House, instead of the scientists at EPA, would look at it and they would say, no way. This is going to hurt our friends in the gas industry. This is going to hurt our friends in the oil industry. This is going to hurt our friends in the big coal industry. And don't forget that George Bush himself was an oil company executive in his previous life. And they would veto these science-based public health rules at the behest of their friends in industry. And so when Obama took office, there was a huge backlog of rules and laws to reduce mercury pollution, to reduce global warming pollution, to clean up our waterways that the science required and that the law required. And the Obama administration has actually made a lot of progress one by one, advancing these rules and making them law, restricting polluters. And just a few examples. Here are some of the things that have happened in the Obama administration. A new rule to limit mercury pollution from power plants by 90%.
Which is something that had been sitting on the desk of Congress, what, for 20 years, right?
Yeah, decades and decades.
Along with the Clean Air Act, when the Clean Air Act of 1990, that was supposed to have been, that was something they were supposed to have looked at, but it didn't happen.
Yeah, so everybody knows mercury is dangerous. It's a mm-hmm. potent neurotoxin. Power plants are by far the biggest source of this pollution. And for two decades, EPA had been unable to muster the political will to regulate mercury from power plants. Actually, there's an interesting history of this because here in Illinois, we have 21 coal-fired power plants. And we were actually the very first state when Obama was a state senator in 2006 to require power plants to install a very cheap technology that cuts their mercury pollution by almost 90%. After Illinois did it, Michigan did it, a few other states did it. We were the first big coal-burning state to do this. We showed that it was possible. I like to think that that contributed to President Obama making cutting mercury pollution from power plants one of his top priorities. But
okay, well, let's stop there for a second. And given that we were in the lead, that Illinois was in the lead with this, why is it then we're fighting this battle right now, the Tenasca bill, which is being considered in the General Assembly right now? And we're still battling to get the Fisk and Crawford coal-fired plants out of Chicago. You know, we take the lead, but what does the lead really mean at this point?
Well, we were in the lead on mercury pollution. There's a number of ways Illinois has not been in the lead. And one of those ways, changing subjects here. I'm going to talk about this Tenasca bill is a state issue.
Yeah, it is. And I will interrupt you one more time, and I apologize. We're attempting to get a lot of stuff talked about in a very short time. That's Max Muller from Environment Illinois. And if you've got comments or questions, you can call us at 763-9278 or write us on Facebook. I got I'll read something that Eric sent us in a second, or Twitter. But back to you, Max, saying that the Tenasca is state issue, which is different from the national issue.
I mean, I think what we're seeing both at the state and nationally is a war. I think that there is a war on our environment, and I think that the combatants in this war are, to a large extent, large entrenched industries, some of the most powerful and rich industries on earth, the oil companies. The five biggest companies in the world are oil companies, the coal industry. These are companies that have been consolidating political power for 100 years. They're the last century's energy technologies, and they are fighting to preserve the status quo. We're seeing this at both the state level and the federal level. The country would be better off, and the state, if we switched to clean energy. We'd have more jobs. Our GDP and employment would be higher. We wouldn't have as much pollution. Energy bills for people would be cheaper, and we could lead the world in innovative technologies that are providing this energy. And there has been a lot of resistance to establishing policies, both at the state level and the federal level, that would allow us to get there. Now, a really good example of this is the Tenasca bill in the state legislature right now. We are in the second week of the 2012 legislative session is going to start this Tuesday. And the legislature is considering a bill that would create a new coal-fired power plant in Taylorville, Illinois. It's a so-called clean coal power plant, and I put clean in quotes.
Everybody puts clean in quotes. Can we get rid of the idea that there is such a thing as clean?
There is no such thing as clean coal.
Okay.
And the reason there is that this plant isn't going to be clean is because it's going to use a new high-tech process to gasify coal and burn the gas. At the point of burning the gas, the pollution is less. But if you add up the process to convert it to the gas, the process of mining, at all the points along the way, the carbon dioxide pollution from this plant is going to be the equivalent of an old 500 megawatt power plant like the two that we have in Chicago that we're trying to shut down. The other thing about this bill, though, it's not just an old school polluting fossil fuel that's going to get new life at this plant. It's really, really expensive. It's going to be the most expensive source of power in the state. There's an out-of-state company based in Nebraska called Tenasca. They're asking the legislature to guarantee that the people of Illinois will buy this plant's power for the next 30 years at above-market rates, regardless of whether there are cleaner technologies available or cheaper fuels available. This is a sweetheart deal for an out-of-state company. It's being pushed under the guise of job creation. We'd create far more jobs if we focused on clean energy. It's bad policy. And we need the legislature to kill this bill. They've killed it three previous times.
It's like Glenn Close in Fatal Attraction. It just keeps rising
up. Zombie bill. Yeah,
the
it keeps coming
bill?
Back. It just passed the Senate. We needed to stop it in the House. I would encourage everyone listening to call their state legislators and tell them that we don't need any more dirty, overpriced power. Please vote no on the Tenasca bill. And I'm glad you brought this up because I wanted to say that. Please vote no on the Tenasca bill. Please,
well,
everyone, ask your state legislators.
Please
that.
Vote no on Tenasca. Please call your state representative. This is, as you mentioned, powerful industries with money have the ability to bring these things up over and over again. They're never dead.
Exactly. I mean, this company has come back for 4 years. Using some of the most expensive lobbyists in the state, and they just keep trying, and eventually they make progress. They got it through the Senate this year, this last November, and we expect it's going to come up in the House. We need to stop this bill. It's the wrong direction for our state. So, you know, back to Illinois. Illinois led the way on cutting mercury from power plants, and that's now a national rule thanks to President Obama. We still get 97% of our energy from dirty sources, nuclear and coal mostly. And we have huge potential.
There are people who would say that nuclear is clean.
In the year of, I guess last year, Fukushima.
Well, yeah, it kind of blew that out of the water, didn't it?
Kind of blew that out of the water. You know, Illinois has more nuclear power plants and more nuclear waste than any other state in the country. We actually have a moratorium on this state in building any new nuclear power reactors until there's some safe way of disposing of the waste, which there isn't now and there probably never will be.
I want to get to a phone call here.
Yeah.
We'll get to that back in a second. 773-763-9278 is our phone number. Let's go to line one. Is that Dan or Don? I can't see it.
Dan.
Dan, how are you?
Hey, I'm okay. Listen, I heard a bit of a backstory about how the government decisions are made regarding fracking specifically that I hadn't run into before, and I wonder if maybe this could be checked out. I was talking to a very high-level attorney in the oil and gas industry, and I was kind of challenging and saying, you know, why was this decision made? Have you seen the Fox, you know, movie and the EPA and all these other reasons? She said, I'm really not concerned about any of that. No, I haven't, because this was already passed on by the civil engineers of the SEC, the Security and Exchange Commission. And I'm like, I didn't even know this was part of the equation. And I was kind of taken aback by that, and I wasn't really sure what to say, because I know that the Clean Air and Water Acts were overridden by that original conference with Dick Cheney. But this is possible that that's where the action is in this story, and, you know, we're looking one place and the action is someplace else. I just wanted to bring that.
That's really interesting. Had you heard anything about like that, Max?
Well, you know, I don't actually know I'm not sure what specific decision the caller is referring to, but
specifically, just it was about the decision that it's legal to do fracking, legal and safe, was according to what I was told, and that this was decided by the civil engineers at the SEC.
You know, this sounds a lot like the situation we see a lot of times at the federal level, where concerns about the environment are overridden by the vice president or, with the Obama administration, the Office of Management and Budget. People who are concerned about everything but the environment, a lot of times they're concerned with the political outlook, the reelection of whatever politician they're serving. And a lot of times we see environmental issues, take a back seat. And I think, I guess I can't comment on this exact decision, but it sounds like a familiar story, and I totally believe it.
Yeah. All right. Well, interesting point there. And now I'm getting an echo in here. All right. but thanks for calling. I appreciate it. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Max Muller from Environment Illinois is with us. Hey, Heather, I'm getting people who have been tweeting that they're not getting anything on the stream today. So we need to check that out and see if there's a problem. Maybe I'll get to Mike Sanders and we'll see if that's going on. We'll be back to Max Muller's conversation in just a couple of minutes. Here's something the Care of Trees would like you to remember. Your trees are living, breathing, growing things, but a lot of people lump their trees into the same category as their roofs or their driveways. That is to say, they consider them maintenance items and not living organisms, and they expect the impossible. For instance, they wonder why you can't cut off 90% of a tree's roots and expect it to survive. Or they can't understand why constantly bumping a lawnmower into the trunk can be destructive. The Care of Trees understands how complex trees are and wants you to know that we shouldn't expect box store solutions to solve their problems. Make the Care of Trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See the Care of Trees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A+ by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
You've been hearing about the D. Landreth Seed Company on this show for months now, but if you want to get a sense of what this iconic American company has to offer, I suggest you like their Facebook page. I think they got about 5,000 likes there. Here's a post from just yesterday about a child-sized lettuce or tennis ball lettuce. And this is the quote on the site, and I think Barb Malera must have written this, and she says, "If I was a caterer, I would keep a farmer under contract 9 months of the year to provide me with fresh heads of this butterhead lettuce, which, when fully mature, produces tiny, perfectly shaped 6-inch diameter heads that fit in the palm of your hand. The variety was known before 1800, and Thomas Jefferson grew it in his hanging garden. It was popular with middle class and working class Americans of the 19th century who stored the tiny heads in salt brine for use throughout the winter. Tennis ball is a great children's garden vegetable. They are easy to grow. The slightly sweet leaves are pleasant for a child's sharp sense of taste, and the dear little heads will fit in the hand of a child. End quote. That sounds like a cool plant to grow. Order a catalog today by logging onto LandrethSeeds.com or call 800-654-2407. D. Landreth Seed Company, purveyor of fine seeds since 1784. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Behind the scenes here, doing some technical stuff. As you know, we're in the new studios, and every week it's different. Every week I come in, and it's different. So we're trying to do this. I wanted to get to Max Muller, by the way, from Environment Illinois is here. We have just a few more minutes, so we should get to what we haven't gotten to. And as I said before, it's a lot. There's a lot going on. We talked about the mercury standards, and we talked about auto fuel efficiency. I'm going to get to that in just a second, but I've got a couple of comments. Mr. Sanders, I don't know if you can you hear me, Mr. Sanders? Put that up there. Apparently something's wrong with the stream. There's okay. And he's shaking his hand and going, I don't know. Okay. No, I understand.
We've put the calls in. We're waiting for them to be answered.
Okay. All righty. I'm looking online at the tweets and some. And I apologize, folks. We're sorry that some folks are not getting the stream. So I guess you might have to go old school and listen on the radio. Eric sent me a Facebook post, which is, Mike, please mention how we can remove ourselves from the equation that leads to fracking, drilling, and wars to secure more of this noxious, and he puts energy in quotes. We will continue to accept the dangers of the stuff as long as we, quote, need it. Energy conservation, composting, living local, ditching the car, etc., are crucial at this time. Which takes me back to one of the things we have to talk about very quickly, Max, and that is what's going on in the Congress with this sort of stuff. And I just heard Boehner the other day, Speaker Boehner, talk about how he's going to attach the Keystone XL pipeline, which, there's another Glenn Close project or issue that's rising from the dead. That one's not going to die anytime soon. He says he's going to attach it to the transportation funding bill. And that transportation funding bill would, among other things, open the Atlantic and Pacific coasts as well as the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to drilling. And this is the weird part. While cutting all funding for biking and walking safety and stifling environmental review for transportation projects. It's not good enough just to drill. The way they play this game is, and we'll take away the stuff that leads us towards clean energy. I don't know what that mentality is all about.
Well, like I said, I think that there is a war on in this country. There is a war against the environment. We've seen in Congress, and I'm talking about in Congress. We've seen 191 roll call votes in the House of Representatives on bills that would gut some of our most long-standing environmental protections in this country, and not just not just undo environmental protections that are already on the books, but prevent EPA and the other agencies that protect the environment from doing their job to protect the environment going forward. This started, you know, in 2010 when the House was taken over by a Republican majority that has, at the behest of its friends in the coal industry and the oil industry, inserted all sorts of anti-environmental riders into must-pass budget bills. Every year, the Congress passes bills that fund federal agencies. And what's happened is the Republicans in the House have inserted amendments and budget riders that fund the agency, but then say, oh, but wait, you can't spend any of that money enforcing this critical part of the Clean Air Act or the Clean Water Act. You can't spend that money protecting our parks and open spaces. It's a real war, and I think this transportation funding bill is just another example. These bills pass the House, and we have to stop them in the Senate. That's happened a number of times. The mercury rule that we just talked about that would cut mercury pollution by 90% from power plants. There have been budget riders that have passed the House to block EPA from enforcing that rule. There's a new car standard that's going to get cars.
But that rule, the mercury rule. Was that an executive order? Is that how that happened?
That was that was under the Clean Air Act at US EPA. US EPA has to regulate toxic air pollutants, mm-hmm. and so they made a rule over the course of a number of years that was based on science and public health. And it's Congress, when it passed the Clean Air Act back in amendments in 1990, gave EPA the authority to do this, required them to regulate hazardous air pollutants. So EPA is doing its job, heeding the science, regulating hazardous air pollutants, and Congress is attaching amendments to the bills that fund EPA that say you can't spend any money regulating mercury pollution from power plants, essentially blocking the program. Under the cover of the budget fights to fund the government, the Republican House is inserting these anti-environmental riders and amendments into budget bills and trying to sneak them through the process. The other thing that's happening is we're seeing in the name of economic recovery and job creation, attacks on our environment. So that's what we're seeing with the Keystone Pipeline. That's what we're seeing with pretty much every environmental regulation on the books that is critical to protecting health has been in danger in the last 2 years in Congress with an amendment or a rider attached to a bill. We've had to stop them in the Senate. We need President Obama to veto them. And this is something I think most people don't know about. House Republicans are trying to gut the Clean Air Act and gut the Clean Water Act, and we've just got to stop them. Going forward, the thing that we need to have happen is we need to have President Obama just stay politically strong. Like I said, the 2012 election's coming up. His team is looking at everything through the lens of this election. We've got the Republicans running for president bashing EPA, bashing environmental rules. I think we really need people to speak out, and we need to communicate that the environment is a winning issue, that if politicians stand for the environment, it's going to be good for them politically. And that's one of the main strategies we use as we do our advocacy, is we get thousands and thousands of people to speak out. So like on the mercury rule, over 900,000 people submitted public comments in support of that rule. EPA interprets that as massive public support. And massive public support is what any administration likes to see as it makes policy in an election year.
That's Max Muller from Environment Illinois. Let's take one more call. It's Russell in Winona. Where are you, Russell?
Well, I'm driving to Winona, Illinois right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm on my satellite farm down here. And I was just wondering if you guys had heard about there's a lawsuit right now against the Windmill Power Company, because they think that the windmills are changing weather patterns, dumping more rain downwind of them and pulling rain away from the fields that they're actually in.
You know what? That's a great question for me to ask my meteorologist, Rick DeMaio, when he comes up. We'll get him on in a second. I have also heard arguments against windmills by certain bird organizations saying that they result in thousands of deaths of birds. And I did some research on that. And from what I can tell, the older windmill technology was fairly harmful to birds, but that the newer technology has greatly improved. And it also matters where you put it. If you put it in a flight pattern, a migratory pattern or area, then you're going to have more of a problem. Max?
Most of the birds just migrate from out here into Chicago and then back out here. They don't really migrate anywhere anymore. Because it stays warm enough in all the retention ponds, they don't need to go anywhere very far away.
Well, you know, but there are different species of birds in different parts of the country, too. Okay. And we're not talking about just in this area because,
very true.
You know, one of the concerns is if you put a windmill, say, in a canyon, and that's where the birds fly through the mountains, you could do some great damage.
The people who site these wind farms are pretty good these days about siting them in places that are safe for birds. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think in the bigger context, big picture, if we don't get off fossil fuel energy sources and coal power, we're going to have global warming, and that's gonna screw things up way more. We'll have
second, if you wouldn't mind. I mean, I do understand that all technology needs to be tested and made sure that it's safe for what's going on. And, I mean, I work in the agricultural business and the industrial agricultural business, and we get a lot of crap, but we also try to make sure that everything is as safe for the land as possible, because if the land goes bad, then we don't have a job. So lots of the industry really does try to work very hard to keep everything as clean as possible. And we would love to work with you guys, but every time we try and talk to you, it seems like we're getting blamed for everything, no matter how hard we try to make things better and still work.
Wait, you say you're getting, you know, it's a shame your phone line is so bad, because this is an interesting conversation. But are you saying, you're saying the agricultural industry gets blamed for everything?
Well, no, I can only speak for the agricultural industry, because that's the industry I work in. But, I mean, chemicals are going to run off, but we try and make sure that everything's within the safe area. And, I mean, I do water testing on all my ground every year. I do groundwater testing. I do testing of streams that go through my ground because I have hog manure.
Right.
Hog manure lets out a lot of nitrogen, and I got to make sure that nitrogen's going where I want it and not where it doesn't need to be. And we try our best to make sure that everything is, but all it ever seems to do with a lot of people in the environmental movement, and I'd like to side with you guys, because, yeah, the environment's very important. It's how I make my living. But it seems that no matter what we do, you guys always find either a new way of testing that tested even smaller, so we got to regulate it even smaller, or you know, just tell me I'm doing things horrible and I got to become an organic farmer even though I can't produce as much food.
Well, those are really good points. Russell, I'm going to have to let you go because of the phone line. I want you to call back. Russell, before you go, you there?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want you to call back sometime. I want you to write to me. I'm interested in your point of view, because if we don't all work together on this, nothing's going to happen. If we don't understand where the other side is coming from, we're at a standstill, and we will truly be in trouble. And I get your point. We were more along the line of the energy that we're producing rather than agriculture and runoff. But it's related, you know, and Max covers those issues as well. So I hope we can talk about this again, and I really appreciate your phone call.
Have a good day, guys.
You too. Bye-bye. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm afraid we're going to have to sort of leave it at that. Do you have any final comments, Max?
Well, thank you very much, Mike. In response to that last caller, I just want to say we need clean water. We need farms in this state. We need farms and food in this country. I think that it's definitely possible to have both. I think that the concern, the big problem, is when old entrenched industries manipulate the political process to preserve laws that allow them to pollute and oppose laws that would cause them to clean up. The president has done a lot of good things. The State of the Union was a source of concern for the environmental community. But let's remember, it's an election year, and a lot of good things are happening, and we need to keep fighting to preserve our environmental laws and keep heading in the right direction. An election year, it's very tough.
And I want you to go to my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show. You will see links to Environment Illinois. Why don't you just give me your website anyway there?
EnvironmentIllinois.org.
See, it's that easy. EnvironmentIllinois.org. And we have some links to some of the issues we were talking about. I hope you will take the time to do that. I hope you will take the time, if you're listening, to contact your state legislator about the Tanasca bill. Say there's all you got to do is pick up the phone and say there's no such thing as clean coal. Bingo. But, you know, the people on the other side, then how do we get our energy? And this is what Russell was talking about on the line, you know, and we go back and forth. Each of us takes a stand for what we believe in.
I think call your legislator. Tell them to vote no on the Tanasca bill. There's no such thing as clean coal. And there's huge potential. In Illinois, we have huge potential to get our energy from the wind and the sun. And we have as much solar potential as Germany and Japan, the two leaders in the world. We've passed laws that are going to increase the amount of solar power in this state. We could see solar panels on the roofs of every flat-roofed warehouse that you see as you're driving from Chicago out in the suburbs for 50 miles. There's a lot of headroom to grow clean energy. We've got rules in this state laws that we've helped win that are decreasing energy need. You know, if you're looking at where we're going to get our energy in the future, the cheapest source of energy, the most job-intensive source of energy, is to not build a new power plant at all. It's to put people to work making homes more efficient.
Yeah, that's homes. You're right. You're absolutely right. That's where we could save most of our energy right now. And it would put, you're right, it would put a lot of people to work, but we don't think in terms of conservation. I got to go because Rick's going to have to get in here. So, Max Mueller, thank you so much, and we will talk again, I hope, very, very soon.
At Innovative Insulation Solutions, their mission is to deliver the highest performing foam insulation systems available on today's market with an incredible R value of up to 7 per inch. Their history of safe and effective application of these systems, coupled with total dedication to quality, consistently earns their customers' trust and satisfaction. They specialize in all types of foam insulation. Spray-applied close-cell and open-cell polyurethane foam insulation, closed-wall cavity injection, and foam-in-place masonry block insulation. Innovative Insulation Solutions is totally committed to anticipating, solving, and supporting all of your foam insulation needs. Call Innovative Insulation Solutions today at 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com. That's 847-454-9081 or go to gotfoaminsulation.com.
Open lands. Sounds like 20,000 acres of Illinois prairie at the Madewin National Tallgrass Prairie on the site of what used to be the Joliet Arsenal. Or the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve, where fragile Lake Michigan ravine ecosystems are being restored at what was once Fort Sheridan. But what about building urban gardens, tree keepers, neighborhood open space planning? These are just some of the ways that Openlands is creating stewards of the urban landscape. And if you're interested in growing food in your neighborhood, now is the time to sign up for the Homegrown Chicago Community Food Garden Network. I talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago. The four-week training program, which starts on March 24th, teaches community groups how to plan, plant, and maintain green spaces with the goal of producing healthy, organic, local food. Get more information at openlands.org. Become a part of the Openlands community. Find Openlands on Facebook, Twitter, and on the web at openlands.org. Openlands, enriching our enjoyment of natural spaces since 1963. Pretty funny tweet here from my, by the way, yeah, one of the tweets is the great herb debate is almost here. That's right, right after 10 o'clock. And one of the things we posted was there's something wrong with our stream at the moment. We apologize for the inconvenience. And of course, Scott Jameson wrote, "It happens as you get older, Mike." Thank you, Scott. Thank you so much. You know what? I already knew that. All right, let's go to line one, and sorry, line two. Are you there, Rick?
Yeah, I knew it was line two all along. Don't worry about it.
Sorry. Hey, listen, I want to real quick a couple of things because that guy. Did you hear the guy called who said was talking about windmills affecting climate. Have you heard anything about that?
No. Windmills don't affect climate, but
weather?
Windmills can have an effect, maybe on some, you know, local mountain valley airflows in the short term that may change the temperature, you know, maybe a degree or two. But you've got to remember, climate's large scale, long term. So I wouldn't say even a windmill farm. I mean, I did one of my graduate classes and papers that we did. You know, it was a 4-month project on one of the largest wind farms in the United States in northeastern Colorado, run by Xcel Energy. There's no way that those windmills actually change the climate. Now, obviously, I think he was referring to bird migration. I think I heard a little bit of that.
And yeah.
The wind farms are definitely a deterrent to, you know, safe bird migration. I guess just the way, you know, tall buildings downtown are, you know. I guess it's and I'm sure the birds get together once a month and talk about how they're going to make sure they fly around the buildings and, you know, around the windmills. It's all part of progress, and it's all part of, you know, the world becoming increasingly populated with a lot of different things, and I think it's all about having to get along with everybody else. But, windmills don't have any effect on long-term climate. They may have an effect on short-term weather patterns, but that should be about it.
But you're right. Buildings, that's a huge...
Oh, God, yeah.
They kill birds by the hundreds of thousands. From what I understand, the main culprit out there, the thing that kills the most birds in the United States is cats. and you think I'm kidding, but
That's why I've never been to the play, Mike.
I saw a study that said... feral cats and cats that people let out are responsible annually for about 500 million bird deaths.
Yeah, I believe that. Yeah. But I mean, it was a fascinating discussion, and Max always has a lot of great information. I think there were parts of, you know, Obama's State of the Union address that was, you know, a little bit discouraging for some and encouraging for others. But, I mean, it is the political season. He's not the president of the Democrats or the liberals. He's president of the United States. And, you know, quite frankly, I don't know how you feel about this, but I think his stand on the Keystone Pipeline was the wrong one. I really think he should have let it get built. And because that oil is going to be produced anyway, and you know what it's going to end up going? It's going to end up going to China via Canada. I really do think so.
Well, I think it's going to happen either way, too. But why should we be complicit? Why, you know, for a few jobs? Because the jobs thing is part of what has been the argument for proponents of the pipeline. And they're right. Talking, if you saw, John Stewart did a, or was it, I don't know, it's either Stewart or Colbert did a really funny thing about how many jobs are going to be created. And it started at 20,000 and suddenly it was a million new jobs. And it's really a couple of thousand mainly temporary jobs. So it's really not a job creator.
Yeah, I guess one way of looking at it was, I mean, clearly he was doing it to, satisfy the base that got him there. But I really think this was subtraction by addition. And even though that's kind of a weird way of saying it, he added to the fact that the people who put him there and that part of the party said, hey, look, you know, we got you here. You got to satisfy our needs. But in the end, I think there was a lot of subtraction on the other part. So, you know what? He may also have done it because I think if his poll numbers, which continue to go up, and the economic news continues to go up, it was a gamble that it's going to end up turning out to be right. But I guarantee you this, if his numbers were lower than they were right now, I don't think he would have sided that way. I think it was a political move. It was a political gamble. And these are all the things that I think Obama never thought about that he would have to do with being president, and now he's doing them.
Rick, one of the things that I sent you this week, which was kind of cool, regardless of your politics, and I found this link on Daily Kos, and it's the title of the thing is "Here's What Climate Change Looks Like." And go to my website, MikeNovak.net. This week's show, scroll all the way to the bottom, and you'll find the link to it. And it's just an amazing maps that show what climate change is doing in the United States.
Yeah, and I know we don't have a tremendous amount of time to talk about it, but I think one of the things, Mike, that it's interesting about that, and this is definitely – this is happening right now across North Dakota and Minnesota, is that the climate has changed to the point – where they are now planting different types of crops based on the fact that the growing season is longer. However, I think also the growing season has actually gotten maybe a little bit shorter in parts of Texas because they're still in somewhat of a dry season, and I think they've actually had to shut down part of their rice crop in parts of Texas due to the fact that it just hasn't been wet enough. And I think the farmers down in Texas provide, I think, 5 to 10% of the rice in the United States, you know, from a domestic standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the whole thing is shifting. You know, you look at parts of Texas and how hot and how dry they were last year. And one of the people I was talking to recently was, you know, examining the rainfall patterns this winter, and they're still very dry in eastern sections of New Mexico, western areas of Texas. And if you're dry now and you don't get the rain over the next 3 months during what is their wet season, you're going into this upcoming summer, which is only 3 months away down there, in much worse shape compared to what we were last year. So that interesting article that we talked about during the week through email has a lot of implications. And when people say it's not happening, it is in different ways, shapes, and forms. If it may not be happening in your own backyard, well, that's because it's called global. And when someone says, "Yeah, but it snowed last week, therefore we don't have the consequences that you said would be in a global way," I go, you know what, think about that question. You talked about something that was happening here in Chicago, but yet you bring the term global into it. You can't equate the two.
And I'm going to give you a two-minute warning, but when you say global, one thing I want to bring up is what's happening in Europe, what's happening here. It's sometimes, isn't climate like weather is actually like a water balloon, and you squish one part and it pops up in another part of the world?
Well, yeah, it's been incredibly cold in Europe, and on top of that, it's been phenomenally cold in Alaska. Anchorage right now up to about 120 inches a year. They normally get about 50. Fairbanks for the month of January was 19 degrees below normal. That's like unheard of. They had every single day during the month of January with a high temperature, which was below zero. But yet here in the Midwest and the Upper Plains, we're running about 6 to 10 degrees above normal. So when we talk about climate change, we talk about climate variability, you have to keep it on a long-term global scale. Otherwise, the conversation, it's like mixing apples and oranges, and you can't talk about the same two.
All right, and you got about 30 seconds to give us the forecast for the week.
Yeah, sure, no problem. So morning clouds, a little bit of fog out there, some sun this afternoon. Gorgeous day tomorrow with 40s expected, and maybe some clouds and some light snow Tuesday. But long term, again, nothing in the way of any long term cold and snow coming back at any time soon, Mike.
Well, okay. Rick DeMaio, go to DeMaioWeather.com, and we will talk to you next week, buddy.
Okay. Take care, Mike. Great show so far.
Thank you. It's going to get better because we've got the great herb debate coming up on the second hour. I hope we get our streaming done. Are we working on that, Heather? I sure hope so. All right, stick around for that. I think you're going to find it fun.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees. Here he is again, Mike Novak. Well, we know I'm going away, and how I wish it were so. So take this wine and drink with me.
All right, are we all strapped in for the great debate here? Heather's busily getting our folks online. All right, let me know, you tweeters out there and other folks. I know we were having issues with the streaming earlier. I hope we're still not. We might very well be doing that. So, you know, we'll see what happens here. There's no reason why we can't have, as I said, we do it old school. And if you are listening to this and you get in on the great debate, I hope you will go to the Mike Novak Show on Facebook and like us. You also can follow us on Twitter, and you can listen to us on the podcast. If you missed the streaming today, there's the podcast, which will be up later. So you know, can put the picture up on the Super Bowl, or the Stupid Bowl, as I call it sometimes. And then you can listen to the show at the same time. How would that work? That would work pretty well. Let's start this, though, by bringing in our special guest. I'm going to go to line one, and Sal Gilberti. How you doing, Sal?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Fabulous. How are things out your way? And you are? Where are you right now?
Well, I'm in Connecticut, in mm-hmm. Eastern Connecticut, at the farm.
Uh-huh.
And sitting in front of a computer and a telephone.
Wow, it's romantic. And it sounds so agriculture-like.
Yeah, well, I just came back out of the greenhouses where I was sowing seeds, so that was good.
Ah. Now, let me ask you a question. Has this, I assume you guys have had warmer than usual winter as well.
Indeed, yes.
Is that affecting your operation at all?
No, well, one way it's affecting it is that I'm not burning as much fuel oil, so that I'm excited about that.
Oh, that's got to be great.
It hasn't really affected business yet, because this is a pretty slow time of year. So, but it's great for us because we probably about have burnt about half the fuel oil that we burned last year at this time.
Oh, that's got to be good. You gotta like that.
I'm loving it.
Sal Gilberti is a third generation owner proprietor of Gilberti's Herb Gardens in Westport, Connecticut. Now, this was established in 1922. I was looking at your book, and he's got a new book out called "Herb Gardening from the Ground Up: Everything You Need to Know About Growing Your Favorite Herbs." And one of the things you say in there is that when you went into this business in 1959, was it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. People said, "You're crazy. This is nutty."
Right.
I mean, why?
Well, there weren't that many people growing herbs then. I mean, in those days, I mean, you were growing herbs, you were either a witch or a warlock, you know, or some kind of nutcase. Truly, I'm not making that up. There weren't.
Well,
you live
in Connecticut. That's where, New England, they're all a little wacky about that, all right?
True, yeah. But, you know, people weren't using them yet. They were afraid of them. They weren't sure what they would, they thought that maybe they would ruin their meals as opposed to enhance them. And so, consequently, there weren't that many people who were doing anything like that, you know.
Wow. I hadn't thought about that. Now, so what was your father and his father growing?
They were cut flower growers, because in those days there wasn't any air freight. Well, their air freight came into the 50s, and that's basically how they started to go into pot plants, and herbs were just a sideline because they were growing cut flowers shipping into the New York market. And in those days you had to be close to the New York market in order to ship.
Mhm. And refrigerated cars and that sort of thing changed the whole equation.
And mostly air freight. Air freight was the big change.
Ah.
Then they started bringing in the cut flowers from the south at a much cheaper rate, and then it pretty much put all the cut flower growers in the northeast out of business, or mm-hmm. they had to diversify. I mean, some went out completely, and then our family chose to diversify into potted plants, and they started with the flowering plants for the holidays, you know, poinsettias and calceolarias and cineraras and so forth. And then all of the potted plants for Easter and Mother's Day, and then they also started growing bedding plants like